You ready to get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builder Show. Today, I speak to Morten Storgaard. Morten Storgaard blogs over at Passive Income Geek. He's been an SEO and been in kind of affiliate marketing or building content sites for quite a long time now, around 13 or so years. He's built up a portfolio of 15 or so sites. He originally started, one of his first sites was called Go Downsize, which was about living in tiny spaces. So, for example, living in small apartments or on boats or, you know, all sorts of small places that you might end up living and kind of how you kind of make that work. Off the back of that, they kind of started a YouTube channel, him and his wife. His wife kind of led on that side of the business. And they, you know, they did some lots of traveling around the world, finding all sorts of different small places that they could kind of talk about and review and make part of their site. And that site's kind of really successful now. It gets a lot of views each year, makes a decent income. So we talk about that. He's now got a portfolio of around 15 or so sites. So we talk about, you know, some of the strategies that he uses in terms of, you know, how does he find a niche, topic research, you know, how does he structure his sites, some bits on social media and what he uses to kind of grow his sites from you know, off of Google. So, oh, and one last thing I almost forgot. Morten's also recently spent 7 months putting together a course which kind of details some of the strategies he's used over time to kind of build his portfolio. So if that's something you're interested in, we've put the link into the show notes as well, so you can check it out if you want to. I really enjoyed the chat. Morten's a really nice guy, really good to and easy to talk to. So I hope you enjoy the show.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builder Show. Today I'm speaking with Morten Storgaard, who blogs over at Passive Income Geek and has a thriving YouTube channel. He's been building his own portfolio of websites for over 13 years now and recently released a course which details some of his strategies. So today we're going to dive in to how he has found success making a living from content sites. Welcome, Morten.
Thanks. Happy to be here, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Cool. So, I've been kind of following your journey, I guess, and your blog and your channel for like some time. So,
thanks.
But it would be really good to let the audience know a little bit more about yourself and your background for those that haven't been following you.
Sure. I started straight out of university, starting an e-commerce site, selling photo products for Denmark, Norway, Sweden, just the Scandinavian countries. We're so small, so you kind of gotta stack a few countries here together to like get any decent audience. So I did that for a couple of years and quickly found myself heading into the SEO department of the company. We had like, we quickly grew to like 10, 15 employees. So I kind of got myself out of the CEO role there, found somebody else to run the company. And then I just did the SEO stuff because we also started doing SEO for other companies. I had an investor invest in that company. So he had a lot of other companies that he co-owned and that he started and stuff. So we started doing SEO for a handful of bigger companies, and that's really how I got into all this stuff. So after 3 years, I left that company and I kept a few of the SEO customers and just started out as an SEO consultant, because I guess my main motivation to become an entrepreneur was to have more freedom and have more, you know, financial freedom, geographical independence, and none of that was like by any stretch of the imagination possible with that business. So it was production. We were producing something like this up here, like photo canvases.
Production,
and we had customer service. We had, you know, all of it. So I got out of that, and that got me into SEO and client SEO for a long time. I did that 7-8 years, I think. So the clients kept getting bigger and bigger, and I it also made it harder to leave because the money also got better, of course. But I finally pulled the plug on that whole thing. Was that 2-3 years ago? But I was phasing out the customers like one by one, and then allowing myself more and more time for my own portfolio sites that I build up like simultaneously. So as I was doing, like, we can also get back to that, how I did that, but I was doing a lot of outreach SEO like 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, and the budgets allowed me to really just go after the big news media sites and do like huge campaigns. And then eventually I could link to some of my own broad sites and use them as a source and include a link here and there. So that there's a lot of synergy there in the beginning. Yeah, so now I'm just 100% my own. I built my own sites, have with my own team of writers and editors. And as you said, I recently launched a course like 3 months ago. So that's what I'm doing now. I work with my community and my students, you can call them. And then I still run my portfolio sites.
Okay, so you kind of slowly, whilst the income from your portfolio was building up, you're kind of phasing down so that's quite nice thing. That's quite nice. That's quite a fortunate way to have to do that. To be able to do that is
I think it
easier
is
than making
almost a leap. Completely removed all the risk because I could see the business getting created as I said goodbye to the other ones. It was not like a clean cut and I had to, you know, take a huge risk or anything. It was very smooth, I think.
Yeah. So in terms of some of the synergies with the companies that you were consulting for with your portfolio of sites, was it a coincidence that you ended up, you know, your portfolio sites were in some of the same kind of, I guess they were in some of the same niches or at least some of the same areas?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So back in the day, I did do outreach, link building and stuff. And so in order to sometimes include a link to one of my own sites to have some, there could be everything from statistics to back up the story or anything really. Sometimes they just didn't really care. You could just write about anything and include a link. So I started to do some pretty broad sites so I could come from different angles. So I started a pretty big tech site back then, many years ago. Because I mean, a general tech site talking about everything, you can pretty much always include something there when you're doing something around e-commerce. So it was a lot of e-commerce clients, but also really just a lot of different.
That's stuff. Pretty nice, actually. I suppose because you could actually write content for knowing that it would fit perfectly with whatever they're doing and get a link. So yeah pretty cool.
Yeah,
cool. So I guess it'd be cool to talk some about some of your sites that you've kind of built over the years. I have to like name any of them, but I know that some of them are public at least. Like Go Downsize is probably the most well known one. The longest standing.
Yeah, it's the big English one that I share on the channel. I have other big ones as well, but I also have a pretty decent Danish tech site. So it's one of the bigger Danish tech sites. We were only like 6 million people, so it doesn't get that big over here, but yeah.
Cool. Let's go into, well, let's go into GoDownsize first then, and tell us a little bit of the backstory of that one.
Yeah, so it kind of started out of a passion my wife had for interior design, and my wife was studying architecture, and we were thinking about starting in more like a traditional affiliate site, and I was thinking about what could we do, find something where there's a pretty good deal of products to mention and talk about, and also where I could see some future growth and stuff. So we decided to go into furniture, Also because it was pretty untouched, I knew probably the conversion rates would be pretty bad. But then again, some of these products are just insanely expensive. So getting a few percentage here and there could definitely add up. So we did that. We started it and eventually, initially more like, we just wanted to do more like a catalog site, just showcasing and showing people like different roundup post of different types of furniture, because nobody really did this. And so the focus there was space saving furniture, because we've been living in small city apartments and RVs, and Maria was really interested in that. So there was the start, and then we quickly started writing about tiny houses, and we eventually got into RVing, because it's also the space where you have a small space where you need to fit everything, and also boating, because Maria was also designing a few boats, interior designs and hotels and stuff. So there was just a lot. So it started to grow bigger as we started venturing into all these verticals. So yeah, so that's where it is today. I think this last month it's around 600,000 page views, and it's a low season now because boating and RVing and also some other travel related stuff is spiking in the summer. So I'm expecting to hit a million page views this summer. I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah. And how long did you say it's been running for now, that project?
Yeah. These are the numbers that I should know, right? I think it's 8 years. It might be 7 or 9, but it's around that mark. Cool.
What have you done in terms of content over that time? Like, you know, how much content's on there?
Yeah, so in the beginning, I was writing everything, and I mean, I'm not a native English speaker, so the initial content was just horrible. I ended up deleting most of it again. So it was a kind of a long start. It was the first site we did in English, and I wrote everything myself. So eventually, I onboarded just one writer. She was very, very good, and I think I was just really lucky there. And she's still working with me and helped me build up the business. So now it's a pretty large team of writers across these verticals. So I haven't done any writing on the site for a very long time. It's 100%. I would say it's outsourced, but to my own team of writers and editors. So it's in-house, you can say.
So I guess you built up quite a bit of content over the years on that site now, though. So
yeah, I think it's approaching, I think we're around 850 articles on the site.
Pretty good. And I guess you say you've already like culled some and deleted some. Have you gone back and refreshed a bunch of content too, or is it just once it's written, it lives there?
Yes, some of it, but not too much. What can you say? I'm going pretty fast right now this year, so I don't look back too much. There will probably be a good return in having somebody go over the old content, but I actually did. But that was more because I found out that I had a few writers who were not knowledgeable enough about boating and RVing and a few other categories. So I actually decided, because somebody reached out to me and showed me an article sitting on my own site that was just pure rubbish. He thought it was satire. He thought it was written for fun. He initially wrote it because it was just so horrible. And I didn't know, because I don't know a thing about boating. And I thought these guys were good writers. So I ended up getting rid of these writers in that category, finding some better ones. And then I hired two boating engineers, like really, really cool old folks who definitely know their way around the boat. And they fact check all these articles and made sure that it's up to date. So I did do a pretty extensive audit of, I think, a couple of hundred articles. And I also did that on a few other sites. So it was a pretty important lesson, I think, to not buy your content too cheap and to really vet the writers.
Okay, so these guys, they're not writing for you, but they're editing it basically, or just fact checking it? That's cool.
Yeah, they're more like, I call them fact checkers. So they go in and they change what needs to be changed, and if it requires a complete rewrite, they will also do that. So if they are up for it, I want to keep them as writers, but mostly they're not really interested in that. They're more just coming for checking the facts. So I pay them on an hourly basis because they don't really write.
So how did you find them?
Yeah, it was kind of interesting because this guy reached out to me, this guy I told you about. And it took me a few days to figure out what to answer this guy, because obviously I had a problem that I needed to solve that I didn't know I had. And so I decided to write him a really kind email back and thanking him for putting it to my attention. And then he eased up a little bit. He was kind of rude, I would say. The language was a little harsh in that email. And it was because he was a professional boater, and turned out he had a huge YouTube following and Facebook group. I think he had like 30,000 people following him, and he's been writing for the major publications. So there was just no way I could afford him. It was, we had a little fall from back, and I decided, or I convinced him to help me find some good writers. So I had some people write a test article for me on a pretty technical topic, and then I sent it to him, and he could say this one is good, this one is bad, this one is good, and so he helped me find some good writers. And I did the same thing for another site where I had the exact same problem, and there I reached out to a Facebook group within the industry and asked if I could ask out in his community if somebody was interested, and he was interested himself, the guy behind that Facebook group. So yeah, that was the process there.
Very good, very good. So the YouTube channel is associated with this site as well, and that's also doing very well. So it'd be good to hear a little bit about how long did that start how long had the site been going before you started the YouTube channel, and how's that kind of have you managed to kind of grow that? Because I think I looked, it's about 120,000 I think now subscribers.
Yeah, it is. And so Maria was 100% in charge of that. And after we had Max, so Max is 4.5, that's our toddler. She haven't been as active. So right now we don't know exactly what to do with it, to be honest. But she built that YouTube channel over, I think, 3 or 4 years. And she was just doing the little bit of this, a little bit of that. And we didn't have like a good strategy in place for it at all. I didn't know a thing about YouTube at the time. I was 100% into blogging and passive sites. So I think she became good at creating these videos, and she was more like the host on the site. So we were doing a lot of home tours, and eventually we were filming a tiny house, these little cute houses on wheels. And it just completely took off because she was one of the first to do that, I think. So one of these videos had like 100,000 page plays in a fairly short amount of time. And then we figured out, okay, so this is the formula for this YouTube channel. We just traveled around the world filming tiny spaces for a long time, and because we liked to travel, that was what we wanted, and it made complete sense to do that. Also out of the business expense, since we were actually shooting content for the YouTube channel. So we went to the States many times for meetups for people living in buses and trucks and tiny houses. We just did like a whole bunch of home tours, and also in Holland, and we went to Thailand to film stuff. And so everywhere we wanted to go, we just made sure to find somebody we could film.
That's one expensive budget, isn't it, for like a YouTube channel, all that traveling.
We also did a lot of content for the site. Yeah. We also did a post for Eats, and obviously we couldn't deduct everything, but it helped.
So you're running ads on that channel as well, as well as pushing people towards the site, I assume.
Yeah.
Cool. Excellent. So you mentioned your Danish tech site then. So that's how long ago did you start that one?
Yeah, that was a little before the downsizing, but I think it's pretty much around the same time, maybe 7-8 years ago as well. So I started these two projects, and I was pretty invested in both the Godownsize site and this one. And so it was mostly built alongside my clients, and just because I was interested in everything tech. And
that's just really just complete, a very broad tech site, is it? It's nothing specifically for
you. Yeah, it's very broad. It started out comparing broadband prices, and actually I changed the front page to just be a comparison of broadband prices, because I thought it would rank better to use the front page instead of the URL deep inside the site. That didn't happen, and now I don't know if I should change it back to just be more like magazine style front page. But that's the main monetization on the site, is comparing broadband prices and also VPNs, and there's some good commissions there, and also mobile subscriptions. That so broadband is a little special here in Denmark because we have a lot of big vendors. So it's not like in the States. I don't know exactly how it is in the UK. I guess you guys also have quite a lot of competition within broadband.
Yeah, we have like four or five main kind of companies, yeah.
Okay, yeah, because I know in the States, in many areas, they'll only have like one option or maybe two, and number two is horrible. So there's not a lot of competition. But over here, there's a very, very fierce competition, and the commissions are sky high, and people change all the time. And yeah, because they get this good deal, and then you can promote that and get people to change once in a while. So yeah.
Cool. Okay. Awesome. So generally, you know, how are, you know, across your portfolio of sites, like how are the sites generally monetized? Is it all affiliate through ads or?
Yeah. So a few sites are very heavily in the affiliate side of things. And my newer sites and my bigger sites are more ad revenue. Also because it's so easy to scale a site with ads because you don't even need to think about putting in affiliate links. You can just hire a good writer and just throw a ton of content out there. But of course, you know that. But yeah, so I think it's also because it's going pretty fast, as I said, the last couple of years. So I guess I should also hire somebody to throw in more affiliate links. But it's for the bigger sites, it's mostly ads. And then I eventually try to dive deep into a category where I know there's some good affiliate deals and try to dive into that.
And they rank easier, generally, the info sites with the ad revenue. So
yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it's easy to get some traffic.
Do you always avoid Amazon, or did you have some Amazon affiliate sites as well?
I do a little bit of Amazon. Yeah, I never really build like a true Amazon site. So I also because I started in furniture, so I, as I said, with GoDown size, and this other site was in the tech department with broadband and stuff. So I got into some other ad networks from the very beginning who had something else going on. So because all these furniture stores were on Share a Sale and Commission Junction and the Vaunt Link and some of those, so I dived into those way more than Amazon. So I've actually never really done like a true Amazon site.
Well, yeah, that's a good thing. That's like less risk right there. So
yeah, I guess it spreads the risk a little bit. And also, you know, people always, a little concerned about Amazon cutting rates and stuff, but
yeah, I think rightly so. They've been doing it for like 10, 15 years now, cutting rates. So it's not going to stop anytime soon. So cool. So it'd be really cool to talk in a little bit more detail about some of the strategies you employ in kind of starting a site from scratch and like, you know, what some of the processes you go through. So I guess, you know, from the beginning, let's go even before finding a niche. Do you always start sites on a fresh domain? Do you use expired domains ever? What's your strategy there?
I've always used fresh domains. Eventually, I would use an expired domain, but just because the name was so good that I hoped it wasn't destroyed, but it was not to gain something from it. I have, I think, tested a little bit with expired domains, but that's very long ago. It's more like 8 years ago. And so, yeah, I guess it doesn't really count. But that was back in the day where you could do almost anything with PN.
Yeah, sure. Cool. So,
but these days I do grab a fresh domain.
Cool. And so you kind of see out that kind of sandbox period, and you've done it.
Yeah, I guess since I've been doing it a couple of times, it doesn't really bug me. I know it takes a long time to rank a new site, and since I have other sites that I can work on in the meantime, it doesn't really bug me. But of course, it's frustrating if when you're building your first site to have to wait like 6, 8, 10, 12 months.
With all of this, we're playing the long game, right? We're not playing the short game. So I think if you can just keep starting them periodically. I think, you know, if you're going to start with fresh domains, start one every kind of whenever you can, as long as you can, you've got the time or budget to be able to afford it. If you can just keep starting them every 6 months or so and keep them running through, it depends on.
Yeah, and I think I started 4 or 5 sites last year, and I started 3 this year already. So I like to start sites, and sometimes I just throw like 10, 20 articles on there, let them sit for a year or something, and then I can see a little bit about what the ad earnings are, if it ranks as I thought it would, and then of course I can build it from there.
For sure. I was saying I found one that I'd forgotten about the other day that I mentioned to Adam, that it's two. I think it was end of 2018. I started it. So 2019. Yeah, like 2 years old, right? And
you found one that you almost forgot about.
So it was like I put like 25 articles on it, and I just looked at it and I found it, and I like dug out the analytics, and for like literally for 2 years, it was just trending upwards the whole time. It didn't just go up and then flatline. It just, but I mean, it still only got to 1,000 sessions a month, right? But it got to 1,000 sessions a month, like really slowly over 2 years, and just didn't stop. You know, it's still trending up. So I decided to start focusing some attention on it now, because like it was a fresh domain, but you know, for 2 years it's been trending upwards. So I figured I might as well start putting some effort into it. So it's definitely worth just starting some and then just letting them sit for a while, and then they've aged. And
I always regret that I didn't start more sites just to have them. I mean, also, if you want to sell like a site with just a tiny amount of money, you know, what is a 30-40 multiplier, it's always worth it. I think if you can find the time to do it.
for sure. Cool. Let's talk about finding a niche then. So how do you go about finding a good niche?
Yeah, so I have a lot of things that I look at. I build out this Excel sheet. I look, let's see if I can remember from the top of my head, but everything from seasonality and how easy this is to monetize with ads, affiliate, and could create an info product, and how evergreen is it, and how, and so it's just a lot of factors. And then I score them from 1 to 10, and it gives me like a total score. So that's how I do it. I try to think about these things and see if there's commercial intent enough. Could I come up with a good list of products that could work for the domain name? And so I think for me personally, finding the domain name and the niche, that goes very much hand in hand, because to me that's really what defines what you can do with it, right? The name of it. So I really, really like the broader domain names. Sometimes even just a branded name, so you can really, I would say, pivot, but also just keep expanding. I mean, I'm happy that GoDownsize was called GoDownsize and not like small apartment spaces, because they would make it a little hard to go into boating and RVing. And since there's a good deal of authority on the site now, it can rank for almost anything. It's just great to be able to like have 1,000 articles about boats and stuff. But
yeah, for sure. I mean, you don't want to limit yourself. You've got a site that's really successful, and then you've got no more content you can write because you've covered it all in your tiny space that you've boxed yourself into, then it's such a shame.
Yeah, I've read that a couple of times, and it's just a shame, exactly.
Yeah. So I definitely agree with that. I always go for branded these days, and then you've got the option if you want to kind of to branch out. So yeah, cool.
Yeah.
And so you mentioned the other thing, we mentioned kind of, you know, evergreen topics. I guess that's important for both affiliate and informational sites, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Also, because my GoDownsize site is it's pretty seasonal, because the most of the content is about RVing and boating, and people don't really do that in the winter, right? So it doubles in the summer, and then it goes down and up and down. So I mean, it doesn't really bug me all that much, because I like to look at it over a year. How much money is it making? I don't need to make this exact same amount of money per month, but you know, in some niches it makes. We definitely need to check a bit deeper on the seasonality.
I mean, it's still evergreen, even if it's seasonal, right? Like it's like,
Two different things.
Whereas I will avoid something like a tech site, because the product range changes every 3 to 6 months, and you got to write another review or, you know.
That's right. I have another pretty big English tech site where I think I managed to find some good evergreen stuff. So I would say in a lot of categories that you would think of, from the top of your head, that would definitely be the case. But for example, something like VPNs, for example, and many other software as a service and software SaaS products, many of those have a pretty long life time. And if I mean, it's easier to switch out MailChimp for something else if there's another vendor. For sure, there's a lot of stuff in the techniques that's definitely not evergreen.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And so in terms of, you know, once you've, I guess part of choosing a niche is like, you know, the topic research aspect of it. So making sure that there's going to be enough to write about, and Yeah, well, tell us about your topic research kind of strategy.
Yeah, so I like to always find at least the first 20 topics before I decide on a domain name and the niche, to know sort of in which direction to go. And for the topic research or keyword research, we can call it, I mostly use Google autocomplete, and the people also ask. And I also like to just really just think about it. What can you say? With a good, can you call it stomach feeling?
Yeah.
going into forums and really just try to immerse yourself in the niche and see, just really write down anything you would want, think about as a beginner, and just try to create a list like that. And then just doing like a ton of searches and see, is this something with a lot of competition? Because obviously for the first articles, you would need to go for something that's either very, very low competition, something with a very, very low competition. So that's what I'm going for. I'm going for what I call underserved topics 100% for a long time, to really get some initial traffic where there's not a single article written on that. So sometimes it's pretty specific, but many times, if you spend a good amount of time, I'm sometimes able to find some pretty broad stuff that hasn't been covered well, with the headlines and the articles are not really on point, that I can rank for.
Yeah, so do you plan out, you said, you know, sort of 15, 20 topics. So I guess you're planning out like a year or two's worth of content potentially, like from the outset?
I try to stop at the around 20 articles, so it doesn't take too long from finding the topic till it's actually on the site. Because if somebody else wrote it, you know, it's a pity, because I want to find something initially that nobody wrote an article about. And so that's definitely my main strategy for getting some initial traffic to the site, to find these really underserved topics. So I spend a lot of time doing that, to find something where it's really just user-generated content and forums, where there's not really any articles at all, to really get the site started with that. So I do that for the first 20, 30, 40, 50 articles if I can. If it's not too competitive, sometimes it's impossible to find that many topics that haven't been written on. And then eventually, as links start coming to the site and it has more and more traffic, I'll start going a little deeper into the niche and find something where there can be a bit more competition.
Okay, so so when you're talking about the topics, you're talking about the articles themselves, really. You're trying to find 15, 20 articles.
Yeah.
I was thinking you meant like 15, 20 topics with like 50 articles or something, you know, in each topic. So,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I start with 20 articles. Yeah. Headlines. Yeah. And then I go from there. And then I try to have them published, and then I find some new ones. So I try to not have like many months from coming up with the article till it's posted on the site.
Okay. So you kind of, you sort of do it in batches of 15, 20. In terms of you research those first 15, 20, and you're looking obviously for very low, because you've got no authority at this point. Is there any point that you just let it sit, or do you just keep just to wait till it gets some traction after that and wait to age a little bit, or you just push on and just keep going, knowing that you're going to come out of the sandbox at some point?
Yeah, all of the above. I would say there's a few sites that I just knew from the beginning that I wanted to really build out to become like large sites with thousands of articles. So for those, I just kept adding like 20, 30 articles every month, even though like nothing happened for quite a long time, because I know it will take off eventually. And for other sites, I just maybe just had an idea that maybe this could be cool to do, but I don't really know if it will work, if it's too competitive. Like if I can really convert these products, get people to do whatever X, Y, Z that I want them to do on the site. So sometimes I will just let 50 articles sit there for a year or two to see how it does with ads and affiliate. So I would say both, but I have a few sites that I continually push the content to every month for a couple of years now. And they're getting up there.
I totally agree with that. That's what I always do. And that's what I always suggest to people as well, is that you're just wasting time. If you're sitting here and waiting for it to sit and then hoping you'll see something, you keep pushing on. If you're systematic about continuously publishing content and keeping that going, then you're going to get there in the end. And I think a lot of people give up like on a site like way too early before you've even really given it a chance. You know, some people think that I've done a, you know, even as low as 30 articles and think that's enough. I should be seeing some like good revenue from, you know, you got to get like 100, 200, 300, you know, like this is like.
Yeah. And especially if those are the first 30 articles they ever wrote, you know, half of those would probably never take off because they didn't really do it right, maybe. So yeah, and then they'll come back after 2 years and something would have happened and they regret they didn't do more right.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And then you've kind of lost lots of time. And yeah, just keep pushing on. And the other thing is that, you know, like generally, like it's about 20% of your articles that make up the majority of all of your traffic to the site. So if you've only written 20 articles, the chances are is like maybe two of them are like the good ones and like the other ones are never really going to rank that well. So you haven't really given yourself like much chance. So
yeah, it's definitely some risk of that. Yeah. I guess it also depends on where you are with your business. So since you and I both have a portfolio of sites, it makes sense sometimes to just test something out and let it sit there and come back to it because we have other things to attend to. But I definitely agree, like for a beginner, they should just keep at it and just keep chugging along till they see the success.
I think the only time I like would like is if I was going into a competitive niche and I was like testing the water on some strategy. And then I want like, because just to make sure that I'm not pushing money into a black hole of something I'm never going to be able to compete for. But if I'm testing out something that's really challenging, but I think I might have a good angle for it or maybe a good expired domain for it, then I might like give it a little bit of a wait, a sit. But because it might be a dead end. But for most niches where you can find low competition keywords, which is most niches still, right? You can still find an angle generally. You know, unless we're talking.
Yeah, some niches you just need to get better at finding them. Dig deeper. Maybe spend like 30 hours instead of 2 hours.
Yeah, like that's so important, just to spend all that time. And you get better and better at finding angles for finding good keywords as well. And then it just takes practice. You can't really teach it. It's like intuition to some extent. And it reminds me when I am. When I first started my career, I worked at Microsoft for like 10 years. And my first job was as a support engineer. And like, I just became really good at mastering how to search, right? To search Google. To search Bing, right? I was searching Bing. oh no, the chip in my head's buzzing now. Yeah, I searching Bing. And, but you know, we had internal knowledge bases and stuff. But you just become really, really expert and really, really good at searching and finding stuff. So like, you know, so it sounds weird because everyone uses Google and everyone searches and everyone probably thinks they search well, but you definitely find, like if you want to find on what's on at the cinema next week, that's easy. But if you really want to find some specific problem that someone's written about, but it's not prevalent on the web, then you really have to like search well. And like, it's a skill at the end of the day, but then so is keyword research. And it only comes with practice and doing it again and again. And if you're just spending an hour here and there and hoping that you found all the keywords for a site and they're the best ones, then you're just wrong. You just need to spend a lot of time up front with that.
Yeah, and it's something I just did a little video for my community about it because somebody I could see in my community was really struggling with this. And I was just talking with them about it doesn't really matter if you need... like if you need to spend like several hours coming up with the first few topics, because it'll probably take you 2, 3, 4, 5 hours to write one of those. So I mean, if by spending 10 more hours or 20 more hours finding good topics and you will have maybe 5 of those eventually ranking pretty well, that will be time well spent, right? Because otherwise you might waste like 20 hours writing stuff that will never rank because you didn't really find the good topics. Yeah.
What's your, we've had a bit of chat on this podcast recently and just in general across our Facebook groups and stuff about like zero volume keywords. Like what's your view on those? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you search in Ahrefs and it says that it's zero. You know, what's your view on kind of zero volume keywords?
Yeah. And that's why I try to call it topics because I'm really not that focused on specific keywords. I try to think of it as a collection of search terms, you can say, because many times, most of my articles, I'd say, rank for between 30 and 200 search phrases when you look it up in Search Console. So I really try to think more of topics and not so much targeting a specific phrase or keyword, because if I do that, maybe I have a headline that would never, if you put it into any tool, like generate anything, and then they end up getting like 1,000 page views. So I really, really like those zero, you can call them zero search volume and keywords. I don't really use the keyword tools all that much to give me estimates, because I mean, many times I will have a lot of traffic because the topic is great, but maybe that specific keyword that you have in the title didn't really trigger anything. And then you rank for something else. I mean, I have some articles that rank for something that I never thought they'd rank for. And then you figure out, oh, it could be an article about specific flag for a boat. And then it start ranking for which flags do boaters use, or what does this flag mean, and all that kind of related stuff. And then I think the specific article has more than 2,000 page views per month, and it was definitely like a zero volume keyword. And then eventually I sometimes change the headline a little bit to fit all those searches that I can see in Search Console, and sort of tailor it toward the right audience, you can say, if that makes sense.
Yeah, makes sense. Totally makes sense. Excellent. Okay, so, and what about site structure when you're setting up sites? Is that something you think about? Do you think about silos and clusters, and how do you structure your categories? How do you do that?
Yeah, not really. I just think about the categories from the user perspective. But then again, I try. So for the first batch, you can say, like, let's take the first 20 articles, for example. I try to keep them very, very closely connected. So maybe it's different aspects of the same product or the same service. So it could be a specific product, and then you try to answer everything that nobody answered about this very specific thing. So I try to keep it closely knit together, but then I might branch into something totally different. And so, of course, those are, you can say, clusters or silos, but for the site, and I guess I haven't been doing too much internal linking. That's also because it's been going a little fast. I've been testing out Link Whisper. I think I saw that on your tools page as well. So I'm testing that right now on the site to get some more internal links, you can say, in the silo structure. But otherwise, I really just structure it for the categories and in the menus, on the pages, on the sites. That's how they're grouped together.
Yeah.
And then, of course, sometimes I'll try to rank for something, and then I'll use some of these, you can say, very related articles, and link all those smaller articles up to this primary money site, money page, I guess you can say. So I think that's the only thing I do there. I care much more about going after something with less competition than the silo structure, I think.
Okay. So you think that almost trumps, if you find some very low competition niche or very low competition keywords, then it almost doesn't matter about the structure and the internal linking?
Yeah, I tried to test this by going extreme in the other direction. So I on purpose did a site with 30 articles where none of the content was by any means related. It was just east, west and center, just to see if I could rank anything as long as there was absolutely no competition. So these were all very, very much, you can say, underserved articles, with no competition at all. And it is ranking, but it's going very, very slowly. It's like 3 or 4 times slower than ever. It's out of mind, but it is ranking. So it just seems like you can definitely cut off some ranking time if you do a good job of siloing or building out categories with similar content. I think it's 2 years old now, and it's only now starting to see the traffic that I would expect it to do after half a year.
That's interesting. That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, I've definitely seen huge upturns in kind of traffic just from sites of people, from guys that have just built a site and virtually all of their pages are orphaned because they've never really linked to anything. And then you go in and do internal linking among those pages, and you can get good results from that, especially if they've got like a decent number of backlinks at the time. Cause like you know, no link juice is flowing to any of those orphan pages. So it's just, it's not going anywhere. It's not seeing the benefit of that. So if you've got a lot of bank clicks and you start putting the internal links in and all that link juice starts flowing around the site, then you really still, you can see some good results for sure for that.
And how do you do that, Mark? Do you use Link Whisper or do you do it manually? What's your process for internal links between a silo or category?
Yeah, so I used to do it manually before Link Whisper, and it was just it's just a nightmare. It's just a pain in the ass. It just takes ages. and it's one of those things where, like, you don't want to get screwed up too much either. So you don't really trust a VA to do that necessarily. Like if they're not skilled in SEO, so and it's hard to, I'm not too strict on it, but I do try to like cluster or create silos for my content. So I'll have different silos, and I try not to link outside of those silos. Like, occasionally it's fine, but like for the majority, I try to keep it all within the site to maintain that kind of topical relevance in that kind of one space. So right now I use Link Whisper just because it makes it a hell of a lot quicker. And I go in and it makes some pretty good predictions on like, which articles should link from one to the other, but primarily I use there's a keyword search you can do. So I start searching some keywords related to that article to find other articles that have kind of got that same content and then link that way. And I just generally try to get 3 or 4 links into any article on the site, and vice versa, and just do it that way.
Yeah, I'm testing to do the same thing, and I'm excited to see if something happens. Actually, I mean, I definitely don't have enough data yet, but I did it 3 days ago on a site that's been plateauing for a while, even though I'm adding a lot of content to it. So I would expect it to soon start getting to a new plateau, and nothing has been happening for a couple of months. But I just added like 200 internal links with Link Whisper like 3 days ago. And the last 2 days, it's actually been growing pretty steadily. So I'm excited to see what will happen after a few weeks if this was actually something that could solve that.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, definitely makes a difference.
Did you see anything like this after you went in and like built a lot of internal links to see it suddenly start? Yeah.
Yes, huge. Especially even like very new sites. So sites that are are in the sandbox. And I kind of similar to you, I just go at it and I just create loads and loads of articles. And then you can't really do internal linking until you've got a bunch anyway, because you've got no other articles to link to. Yeah. So I get to like 50, 100, 200 articles, and then I do the internal linking. New sites, Search Console, the impressions, you'll see this like boner kind of really spiking up. Yeah. And I think it's just helping. I mean, I've not tested it side by side, but like I suspect it's helping you kind of speed up that sandbox process a little bit, but you're definitely I definitely start ranking for more keywords and getting more impressions much more quickly when I've done that.
Okay, I'm excited to hear that, because I mean, of course I do some internal links, but I've just been dripping them here and there. I have never before like not done it and then all of a sudden put all of them in there. So I'm excited to see how that works, because it's pretty hard to know with all these different factors what really makes it tick, right?
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, no, it's cool. Yeah, give it a go and let us know how it turns out. But yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, and thanks for sharing.
I think it's really undervalued, actually. Like I think it's one of those things that's so boring. Like a lot of people can't be bothered to do it, and therefore you.
Yeah, but it's easy. I mean, it's something that we can actually control. Mm. It's not like you need to find the site or have somebody else do something. You can actually just log in and do it. It's just dead boring. But I mean, if you want to do it. So I try to just spend like half an hour per day doing it, and then eventually go through all these tons of articles and make sure that I get them to link. So I'm excited to see.
Yeah, do it. Awesome. So social media, we've already mentioned like I guess you call YouTube social media, but kind of, do you ever use any other social media for your sites? And if so, like what and how?
Yeah, only YouTube and Pinterest. Just because, you know, they're good traffic drivers. I never really used like Instagram and Twitter. Feels like you just drip another little tweet or picture in the big sea of nothingness, and then nothing happens. So Yeah, so Pinterest in some niches, for example, with Godown size, because it's furniture, it's interior design, so it's very, very visual. So it makes a lot of sense. But not for all sites. I also have bigger sites that I didn't build like any social presence for, and they do really well as well. They didn't rank any slower, I think. So I think it's an opportunity for extra traffic, but I don't see it as necessary. But I mean I could be wrong. I'm not in any YMYL niches. I did a little bit of testing that failed. So I don't know if maybe it's important there. What do you do with social media profiles? Do you do that?
Yeah, I only really use Pinterest as well in any kind of great capacity, because like you say, like all other social platforms are transient. So like you post and it's gone, and it's gone forever. Whereas Pinterest is a visual search engine. So people will come back, and just like SEO, they'll come back in a year's time and they'll search for something, and your pin will show up, and then they'll end up on your site.
Exactly.
So I've got like a home site that like 45% of the traffic comes from Pinterest. It gets about 60,000-70,000 sessions a month, and 40 is all Pinterest.
Is it converting as well? I don't know if you do affiliate or ads with it, but is it making as much money per 1,000 page views as search traffic?
The truth is, I haven't even never tested it. I don't know, to be honest, whether it does or whether it doesn't. That's the honest truth. So
I think on my side, Godown size, it's doing pretty well. It's maybe pulling in like 80% of what Google search traffic. But Google search, I mean, organic Google traffic is by far the best traffic source across my site.
Yeah, I think that generally is the case. I mean, it's about 2/3 of it is ad revenue, I think, and 1/3 is affiliate on that site. But it's still great for ads and that's so you can't complain. And it's like it's pretty cheap as well, you know. Like I've got someone who does that for me, and they just create pins on all the new blogs, but they go around and create pins on all the old blogs again and kind of just keep pinning stuff. And
I definitely need to find somebody to do that. I had one at one point, but then she quit and I didn't find any person to do this.
I haven't really kept up with it like too much. Like the guy, he kind of keeps up with it somewhat, but I think we used to use, I can't even think what it's called now, Tailwind. Yeah, I'm using, you know, but
yeah,
these days I don't think that's a recommendation. You're supposed to be using Twitter live pinning, something like that. Pinterest live pinning. Tailwind was the thing. Like it was the only tool. It was great, and it just did lots of things. Yeah. But I think like you just can't, like that just doesn't work as a strategy anymore. They kind of eliminated that tool. So for a long time, you're supposed to be not pinning directly on the Pinterest platform, but you're supposed to pin from your site. That apparently is like kind of better, but you're supposed to use I think it's called live pins, Pinterest live pins. Let me just check. I'm going to search for it while we're doing this, but yeah, it might not be called live pinning because nothing came up, it's live pinning. It is live pinning. So it's like, it's something that's on the Pinterest platform. So they've kind of forcing you to kind of use their platform, I think, rather than like Tailwind. So.
I mean, it also makes sense for them to not be so dependent on software that kind of tries to cheat, right? Look like a real person just going crazy all every day long.
But I would say definitely Pinterest as well. For visual niches for sure.
And also sometimes just very, very low competition on Pinterest. I mean, some of the crazy stuff you can just rank for, and the same thing with YouTube, right? If sometimes you're able to grab some good views and traffic for the very competitive stuff that you couldn't touch with a blog post. And then sometimes you can send some traffic to the blog post, whatever. Yeah, make some money.
Yeah, yep. I agree. So what do you do for link building? Do you actively link build? Is it more organic?
So I don't do any outreach. I did it back like many years ago for my clients, as I told you, but I don't do it these days. So mostly I just go go for a lot of content and what I call underserved content where there's not an article already, and then it's easy to link, to rank for it without links. And then as the traffic comes, the link will of course follow. But I do have some, some formats, or can you say types of articles that tend to attract more links. And that's also something that I try to go over in my course. I looked at a couple of thousand blog posts across my sites to see what gets links and how can I tweak that to have more articles sitting on the site that will have a higher chance of attracting links. But really these days, I don't care that much about it. I was obsessed with links like a decade ago, and 5, 6, 7 years ago. But since I found that I could link, I can rank without links for a new site, I did a couple of case studies on my YouTube channel. I've been able to, so one site that's less than 2 years old, this summer it'll be 2 years old, it's getting close to 300,000 page views now in a, I would say, a fairly competitive niche. And I didn't build like a single link to it. And it's from, and I think on average, the articles are getting 900 page views on average. So it's getting a really good deal of traffic. And now, I mean, there's links, new links every month from good sites. So I don't have any active strategies other than I try to build out content that I know will eventually get some links.
Yeah. I mean, once you get to a certain level, you can definitely start getting those links like organically. It just takes a while to get there. Like we said before, if you're playing the long game, it doesn't really matter. Like you'll get there in the end, but certainly once you get starting getting into the tens of thousands worth of sessions, then yeah, you do just naturally start picking up links on a.
Yeah. And also I also have another site that's getting a couple of 100,000 page views. And if you look in the tools, I mean, the domain authority is maybe 4 or something, because there's not really many links, but it starts to beat some competing articles. And I don't know if it's just because Google can see that I have good metrics on the site. I like to write long format articles and really, really get into like the subheadings. I don't try to cram a lot of keywords into the subheadings. I try to really just create the best possible outline. Sometimes I will have 4 or 5 subsections where I don't think people would actually search for it, but it would just make this article better to keep people on that article. So I really think mostly about the user experience there and see if I can create a resource that's just by far better than all these other articles. Sometimes, you know, you can just see that you just stuffed every keyword in there and it doesn't really make sense when you read it. So people bounce off after paragraph 2. And then I find I can typically beat it with just a good article where I really target the intention behind the search. I think Google is getting better at picking up like good content, at least to some extent. I don't think that, of course, they can see what's in the article, but they can see what the user is doing in Chrome, right? And if they like the article and stay there and click on it and click around.
Yeah, I think definitely over time there'll be no need for links, because Google will know what's good content and what's not, like ahead of time, and they won't need those external kind of factors to like be able to predict that. But I still think it's quite a long way away.
Sometimes you find horrible content on a very, very established site, right? So it doesn't mean that you have good content just because you have a lot of links to other articles.
Yeah. For sure. But I think it's still a way away. I mean, I always still try to build links, because for me, it's like, you know, you try to do all of the things like to like make the site good, right? So you're going to do some on page, you're going to do some good content, you're going to do internal linking. And for me, just like link building is like links is like one of those other things that should be in the mix. So I always try to do like some link building on my sites, because it's kind of like, why ignore that one factor? Like it's still probably one of the biggest factors. I just kind of go for it.
Yeah, it's for sure. It's definitely still a factor. They're very open about that as well.
But it's it's hard. It's time consuming, and it's not the only way. Like playing the long game, you don't necessarily need to do it.
Yeah, I built thousands of links. I just took like a decision 3 or 4 years ago, also with my clients, to stop building links, because I could see that I could rank for these underserved articles, and then I just really tried to get good at finding those. Mm. and see where I could get a good deal of traffic. So of course I will rarely rank for something like best X for Y, because those will typically need some more links, right? Because they're more competitive. But I don't go for those for the first couple of years until I get some links. I just spend my time and my money getting more content up there. But I mean, there's definitely a case for both sites, and there are links is definitely a huge ranking factor. So yeah, and I pulled a ton of links myself back in the days. I just decided to quit it.
Yeah, I think there's no problem with that. I'm waiting for somebody to come out with I only build links, I don't build content. That's all I do. I don't think that would work so well though, but build links to nothing, just a domain name on a landing page.
Yeah.
Cool. So you've recently launched a course which you spent months toiling over, so this is your time. Tell us a bit about your course.
I launched it in late November, so what is it, like a couple months? And I tried to do something a little different with the course. So I have all these modules and I talk about all this stuff that we talked about here, finding a good domain name and niche and keyword research, setting up the site and all this stuff, SEO and so on. So, and then after I built out the course, I started building an actual site inside where I film everything. So you can say I take my own course and show how to actually find the domain name, and I show them how I register it, set up the site, and how I find each topic. I record myself doing the actual outlining and writing the article. So I think it's 15 hours now of just me working on the computer doing stuff. So I did edit out like pauses and breaks and herbs and art and stuff. But it's there's this other aspect to my course that I think is a little unique, to actually see me build in, not just talk about how to do it, but I show people how. Then after they know how to do it, I show them how I do it. So I'm having a lot of fun with that. So I'm building this site inside my community with people. And it's been a very, very long time since I've been writing articles myself. So it was kind of fun to actually write the first 30, 40 articles, hire somebody from there too. So I'm still doing that. I think I wrote the first 13 articles now for this new site.
Cool.
So that's kind of interesting.
So tell us about the community aspect then. How is that? Is that a forum? Is that like a Slack channel?
It's a forum. So when you log into my site, you're also automatically logged into the community on the site. So it's not a Facebook group. It's more like where you have like topics and you can, more like a message board or community that way. So it's like that. I think there are like 250 or 300 people in there now or something. And I'm really enjoying it, and I'm in there daily and I'm learning some good stuff. I just learned some new stuff about Gutenberg a few weeks ago. I just ditched Elementor across my sites. I've been redesigning my own sites for the last 2 days straight now to set them all up with Gutenberg to hit some better core web vital scores. I didn't know actually that you could set up a site with sections, like you have this article and then you have, this category of articles and then you have this section. So it's just some new stuff that I learned, that I used Elementor for that on my own sites to sectionize, you can say, my front pages and category pages and stuff. So it's pretty fun to have that community going. And there was also something, it was definitely one of the main reasons why I started the site. And I started the YouTube channel because I wanted to start the course, that when I did that hand in hand. And I started the YouTube channel and planned for the course because it was just a little lonely to do affiliate and content sites. And especially sitting in Denmark, I don't know anybody else in Denmark. Well, now I know like a few handful from my community, but there's not a lot of people here in Denmark building like American websites to monetize with ads and affiliates. So I wanted to sort of build a platform to get to know people like you. And now I'm sitting here talking to you, and it's just something that I really enjoy. It's been opening so many doors for me with the YouTube channel and the course. So that's definitely one of the main motivations for me to meet all the people. And I'm very, very happy that I have some, I mean, of course, I have a lot of beginners, but I also have some guys inside the community that I can learn from who are ahead of me, who do some pretty amazing stuff. with their own. One guy in there is building his own content management system. So it's actually more like a publishing system. You think something like ClickUp or Trello, but just to be able to publish like thousands of articles. It's kind of interesting to see what people are doing when you get behind the scenes and down in the basement and see what they're building.
Awesome. Cool. Well, yeah. Long may that continue. I hope that goes well. So where can Danish affiliate marketers or actually anyone find more about you? Where should they go?
Yeah. So everything I do is on YouTube and also on my site is the same handle. It's passiveincomegeek.com. And everything I do is in English, of course. So, so I do eventually have somebody from Denmark there, but it's very international. I really enjoy that. So it's passiveincomegeek.com and also on YouTube. There's a video there every week. Yeah.
Cool. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
No, I think you covered it pretty well. I really, really enjoyed talking to you, Mark. You're obviously very smart and you know exactly, you guys really know what you're doing. So it's really been a pleasure to hang out here and also get to know you a little bit more. And I think you asked some really good questions.
Great. Well, thanks very much, Morten. And thanks for joining us on the show.
Thanks.
Thanks again for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. If you're listening to the podcast version of this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please rate and review, as this will allow us to grow our audience and create more shows like this one. If you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe to the channel and click on the bell to be the first to know about any new episodes that we release. Until the next episode, goodbye.